This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Judiciary Committee of the Senate will come to order. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Notice to those that are testifying, please sign in at the podium. Please silence your communications devices. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Here.
Heinert? Monroe?
Here.
Rush?
Here.
Valley? Norstrup?
Here.
Teason?
Here. Thank you. Approval of the minutes from Tuesday's meeting. Any additions, corrections, or comments on that?
Move.
Is there a motion? Senator Bradford moves to approve the minutes, seconded by Senator Monroe. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. All right. We have three bills up for consideration today. And unless someone has any comment, I think we'll start our bill hearings. Before we adjourn today, I'll try to review for you the upcoming schedule. But let's move to bill hearings for now. First bill set for hearing is Senate Bill 30. Provide the Department of Corrections employees are excluded from concealed weapons permit requirements when on duty and acting under the color of authority. Comes to this committee at the request of the Department of Corrections. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 30. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Ashley McDonald. I'm legal counsel for the Department of Corrections, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 30. Senate Bill 30 ensures there is specific authority for correctional officers to be armed in the performance of their duties without the need for a concealed weapons permit. State law currently exempts law enforcement officers or parole agents from the need of a concealed weapons permit. South Dakota Code has two definitions for law enforcement officer. One definition includes correctional staff and parole agents, and the other definition does not. So what Senate Bill 30 does is it removes the specific reference to parole agents and replaces it with reference to the statute for the definition that includes correctional staff and parole agents.
Okay. Questions? Any questions from the committee? Why don't you start by reviewing with us the circumstances under which correctional officers carry weapons?
Sure. Correctional officers don't carry weapons inside the secure perimeter. The only time they carry firearms is when they are escorting a secure custody inmate outside of the secure perimeter for medical appointments or going to court or transfers between facilities.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe rather than a question, it's an answer to a question that Senator Monroe expressed to me earlier. But wondering how this works. What happens is, okay, 2214.9 in Senate Bill 30, line 6, says law enforcement officers as defined in 2212. And 2212, which you probably don't have, but I have, does include the correctional officers. So that's how taking out the parole agent but referring to the other statute does incorporate them into that section. Yeah.
Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Everybody keeps looking over here.
I talked to my other self and talked my other self out of this. The bill's good. I'm good with it. So rest at ease, Mr. Chairman.
I've been at ease all morning. I intend to stay that way. Thank you very much. Other questions for this witness? All right. Hearing none, thank you very much. Other proponents for Senate Bill 30? Are there other proponents for Senate Bill 30? Pretty quiet this morning. All right. Are there other opponents? Opponents to Senate Bill 30? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and move to questions. Any questions from the committee? Discussion and action. Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on Senate Bill 30.
Second.
Motion by Senator Monroe, due pass, seconded by Senator Valley. Discussion on that motion. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this will make things a lot more practical. I don't think there's any harm in it at all, and I think it'll make officers safer. Should have been done a long time ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? Other discussion on the motion? Senator Rush.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I think probably all this is doing is approving what's been done for a long time, that correctional officers have been carrying weapons, but the statutes have been kind of contradictory as they are right now.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none, the motion on the floor is due pass Senate Bill 30. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Heinert? Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Rush?
Aye.
Senator Valley?
Aye.
Senator Norstrup?
Aye.
Senator Teason?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Move consent.
Senator Valley moves consent. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Senator Rush seconds. Discussion on the consent motion. Voice vote. All in favor of consent, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. Senate Bill 30 will go to the floor on consent. We move now to Senate Bill 31. Came to Judiciary Committee at the request of the Department of Corrections, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the sentencing and supervision of prison inmates and parolees with suspended sentences. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 31. Good morning, Ms. Filer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Lori Filer with the Department of Corrections. The page is distributing a handout of a couple of existing statutes. Some of you may have these already, but just in case, I'm going to reference them during my testimony. And I thought better than having no copies, having multiple copies. So, as the chairman said, this is a bill that's brought at the request of the Department of Corrections, and it deals with inmates who have suspended prison sentences. Just in summary, this bill really does three things. First of all, it reinforces that the Board of Pardons and Paroles and the Department of Corrections have the ability to impose and enforce supervision conditions on an inmate with a suspended sentence. Secondly, this bill reinforces that an inmate on suspended sentence is subject to the same supervision and revocation procedures as a parolee. And then finally, what this bill does is it provides a mechanism for low-level felonies, a way to address low-level felonies consistent with the Public Safety Improvement Act when those felonies are committed by somebody who is on parole at the time that they commit that felony. So let me just try to give the committee a little bit of background in my testimony. State law authorizes suspended sentences for prison inmates. And suspended sentences really can be a couple of different things. They could be a partially suspended sentence, like a five-year sentence with 3 years suspended. Or they can be a fully suspended sentence. An example of a fully suspended sentence would be like 2 years with 2 years suspended. Now, a partially suspended sentence in my first example, those folks are committed to the executive branch, and they are under the supervision of the Board of Pardons and Paroles during their period of supervision. Now, a typical fully suspended sentence doesn't go to prison. I mean, if it's 2 years with 2 years suspended, they stay in the community, and that person is typically on probation. The only exception to that is a lot of times the people that we end up with in prison have more than one sentence. So it's not uncommon at all for a person to have a penitentiary sentence, and then they have another sentence, and if that sentence is fully suspended, that person is still under the jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections because they're already in corrections. And if you will reference your handout, you'll see the existing statutes that provide for that. The first one is 23A2718.4. I'd like to highlight a couple of things with that. One, in the middle of that where I've highlighted in yellow, it talks about that the defendant with a partially suspended sentence is under the supervision of the DOC and the Board of Pardons and Paroles. So that's already there. And then that final paragraph is where it addresses that issue of a fully suspended sentence. And if that's connected to another pen sentence, then they're under DOC. Okay. What I call the companion statute is 23A2719. And that really addresses a situation where the court has jurisdiction over a sentence for 2 years after sentencing, where the judge can go back in and can modify that sentence. Let's say they gave them a long sentence and the person's kind of gotten their act together and the judge wants to reduce the sentence a little bit. The judge within that two-year period can come back in and suspend a portion of that, and that's what 19 is talking about it. But again, the highlighted portion, it talks about a person whose sentence is suspended pursuant to this section is under the supervision of the Board of Pardons and Paroles. So that's what existing state law is, to just kind of set the foundation for it. Inmates on suspended sentence or suspended sentence supervision functions like parole supervision. It's really kind of a seamless thing. There are existing laws and rules, in addition to these that I shared with the committee, that make it clear that an inmate under suspended sentence is considered a parolee, that the board can exercise supervision conditions beyond the court-ordered conditions, and there is also a law that references a situation where a suspended sentence is revoked while the offender is still an inmate. However, these rules and laws are scattered and confusing. Sometimes you have to reference one law and then go find another law. And this has been this business with suspended sentence supervision under the executive branch, setting conditions, revoking on those conditions, that's been a kind of a constant source of confusion over the years. There were a couple of recent state Supreme Court cases that considered the issues around the DOC and the board's authority to impose conditions. First of all, impose conditions, and revoke conditions for failure to comply with these. And sections 1 through 3 of this bill seek to address that and to make it somewhat clearer. There was also another recent South Dakota Supreme Court case that dealt with the question of I'll call it dual supervision. And the finding in this case, it was called the Orr case, O-R-R, was that an individual can't be on probation and parole at the same time. So the final section of Senate Bill 31, Section 4, addresses this prohibition within the context of presumptive community supervision for low-level felonies. So section-by-section detail here, I'll kind of go through it. The substantive change in Section 1 is actually at the top of, first line on the top of page 2. All the other changes are LRC-style informed changes. The substantive change is the insertion of the word parole. And if you look at your handout, you can see that the ability of the board to revoke the suspended sentence for violation of the terms of parole or the terms of suspension is already in 18.4, but it's not in 19. And that's what we're seeking to do, is to insert that word parole so the board, it's clear that they can revoke for the violation of the conditions of parole, revoke a suspended sentence for that. So that's just that simple insertion. Section 2 addresses rule and program compliance as an inmate. When we have an inmate that comes in with a suspended sentence, we give them their suspended sentence conditions almost right away, even if they're going to be in prison for 5, 6, 7 years. We tell them right up front, this is what you're going to have to do in order to retain that suspended sentence. And what Section 2 does is it clarifies that the inmate is subject to the rules of the Department of Corrections, and they have to maintain a good disciplinary record and comply with programming required by the Department of Corrections. On occasion, we will have an inmate who doesn't make parole, and parole will usually come before suspended sentence. You know, they don't make parole because they've had a terrible disciplinary record or they are not compliant with their programming. And what we get the most wound up about with not compliant with programming is sex offender programming. I mean, if somebody doesn't go through their money management class, we're not going to withhold parole over that. But something like sex offender programming, we take that pretty seriously. So if we have an offender who says, I'm not going to do it, and has multiple high-level major rule infractions, and they don't make parole, when it comes close to that suspended sentence, we will take action to revoke that suspended sentence. Because if it's somebody who is not eligible to go out on parole because of their conduct, the feeling of the board is that the law is really, it's imperative that we take action on that. And again, I don't want the committee to have the impression that big bad DOC is trying to hold people in prison. That's not what our business is at all. We have a surprising number of people who have suspended sentences in prison. We pulled the numbers in preparation for committee testimony, and between the total number of people on parole and inmates, about 40% of our offenders have suspended sentences. So several thousand people, I think it was 2,700 people, have a suspended sentence. So it's a very frequent occurrence. We had 20 people last year that the board revoked their suspended sentence while they were still an inmate. So that kind of puts it in perspective. I had staff do some case studies, and one of them, it was a fellow who had 57 major rule infractions. So we're not proposing to revoke suspended sentences because somebody doesn't make their bed. It's serious stuff. So that's what Section 2 does. Section 3 makes it very clear, hopefully, that an inmate under the supervision of the Board of Pardons and Paroles and the DOC, due to a suspended sentence, is subject to all of the supervision and revocation provisions of the parole chapters, which are chapters 2415 and 2415A. Honestly, I think by piecing together our current statutes, we're pretty close to being there already, but there are a few statutes in 2415 and 2415A that deal with supervision or revocation that don't have the word parolee in there. So I think that this is just kind of a blanket kind of safety net with that. And you may be saying, well, what does that mean? Well, the supervision conditions. When we have a person on suspended sentence, we just assumed they were going to get earned discharge credits when those things were implemented as part of the Public Safety Improvement Act. Those are included under 2415A. The legislature many years ago required supervision fees for parolees. We just assume people on suspended sentence are supposed to pay supervision fees, and that's the way we've operated. There's also due process protections in the code, in those chapters, that when we have to proceed with a violation, that a person under suspended sentence, when the board is looking at a violation, the person under suspended sentence is also entitled to those obligations. So Section 3 just makes that really clear. And then the final section is Section 4, and this, again, goes back to the Orr case, and that was the case recently that said a person can't be on probation and parole at the same time. There is, you know, under the Public Safety Improvement Act, most Class 5 and 6 felonies are now considered to have presumptive probation tied to those. And when we have a person out on parole, so they've been in prison, they're out on parole under parole supervision, if they commit another low-level felony, Class 5 or 6 felony, what's been happening the last couple years, if the judge feels it's appropriate, there have been occasions where the judge has gone ahead and put them on probation, had them go to treatment in the community, sanctioned them in the community, but has not determined that they need to have another prison sentence for that low-level felony. Well, with this Orr case, they can't put them on probation anymore. And so the Section 4 provides an option for the court when the court sees that this is appropriate, where that inmate can be sentenced to a fully suspended sentence So they're still going to be on community supervision, but they're just under the Board of Pardons and Paroles for that supervision. One of the things, and I was talking about this section, I just want to make clear, though, when the judge sentences that person to a fully suspended sentence, the judge can, in his or her order, put conditions on that, and the board is responsible for enforcing those conditions. So if the judge has particular things he wants that person to do as a condition of that suspended sentence, that can be carried out. So with that, I will try to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Filer? Clear as mud, right? Complicated issue. You did a good job of walking us through it, I think. But any questions? All right. None for now. If we think of some, you'll come back. Thank you. Other proponent testimony, Senate Bill 31. Is there other proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there opponent testimony? Opponent testimony, Senate Bill 31. All right. Closed public testimony. Questions from the committee. Senator Valley.
I do have a question for Ms. Filer. If I get a suspended sentence, and the judge then would give me a list of things I need to do, but that it's a responsibility of the Parole and Pardons Board, even though a suspended sentence and I never went to prison, to enforce that? Is that correct? Or how does that work if I got a fully suspended and then I screw up in the process and then I am under board and rules of the parole board, but if I'm just coming out immediately and the judge says, you got a suspended sentence, here's what you got to do, who's my guide?
Go ahead.
If it's a fully suspended sentence, 2 years with 2 years suspended, and that's all the person has going on, they will never go to the penitentiary. They're going to be under the supervision of the court system on probation, more than likely. Okay, so that's not an executive branch function. DOC, Board of Pardons and Paroles, doesn't have anything to do with that. Now, if that person were to violate the terms of their probation and the judge revoked their probation, that would be still the judge's responsibility because they're not a DOC. A judge revoked their probation. The judge could sentence them to prison. And then they come into prison just with a regular sentence. I mean, then DOC is starting from the start with them at that point. They may come in with a two-year sentence. And the suspended sentence has nothing to do with it at that point. Then they're just like a regular straight sentence. So
once they go to prison, they become DOC executive branch. And then DOC has the only responsibility for supervision, and because we can't have two branches of government supervising at the same time.
Mr. Chairman, that's almost always true. the one exception, and let's see if I can find it. I think it's referenced in one of these statutes. There's a thing called a suspended imposition of sentence, where a person gets those one time for one offense. I think it's in 23.27.18.2. It's referenced in the kind of right about here on 19 in the handout. The suspended imposition of sentence is really a sentence of probation. But the judge can order a defendant to have to do up to 180 days in state prison as a condition of that probation. So if they have a suspended imposition, they could be in prison for up to 180 days, but then they go right back under court services at the time. I'm sorry? Excuse me.
Go ahead, Senator Valley.
So then they come back to the court's jurisdiction, and they're not, and this doesn't change that because it's not dual. It's a handoff.
That's exactly right. Yes, yes. This does not change the treatment of suspended impositions at all.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Other questions? Most of us are sitting here quietly. Senator Rush is sitting here quietly with a smile on his face because he did this his whole life and he understands all of this.
Quite to the contrary. I got reversed a number of times because I didn't understand it, and I just don't even want to go there, other than to say I think they're doing something to fix this, some of the problems.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
All right. Seeing none, committee discussion and action.
I'll move do pass.
Senator Valley moves do pass. Senator Bradford seconds. Senator Valley, comments on the do pass motion?
Well, I'm not going to make a lot of comments because I'd probably get myself into trouble and I'd see Ms. Feiler back there shaking her head no. So I think what this does do, because there was a case that went to the Supreme Court and said you couldn't have dual ownership of the ability to oversee a person, I think that's probably the biggest thing of this, and I think this straightens it out, so I'd encourage your support.
Thank you. Senator Bradford?
One thing, thank you, Chair. I think the average lay person, which most of us are, except for a few, and we're under the interpretation that a suspended sentence, literally, you, for that part of the sentence, you walked away, and we're not obligated to anything. But when you realize that it's a total supervisory time, that this bill is going to make that a lot simpler and I think a lot better to handle. It'll be an advantage to both sides.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the do-pass motion? Seeing none, motion is do-pass, Senate Bill 31. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Senator Heinert?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye. Motion carried.
Consent.
Senator Nordstrom moves consent.
I'll second.
Seconded by Senator Valley. Discussion on the consent motion. All in favor of consent, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. Senate Bill 31 will go to the floor on consent. All right, we move now to Senate Bill 33. Came to the Judiciary Committee at the request of the Department of Public Safety. It's an act to revise certain provisions regarding chemical testing and revocations of driver's licenses for persons under the age of 21. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 33. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jane Schrank. I'm the program director for the Department of Public Safety Driver Licensing Program. And we are, Department of Public Safety is bringing Senate Bill 33. There are a couple of reasons we're bringing it. First of all, just what this bill will do is that if someone is arrested for not an adult DWI, but just for a minor under 21 years of age who is arrested for having 0.02% blood alcohol content under 322321, if that person refuses the chemical test during their arrest, the officer would not take the blood, which is different from an adult DUI. You know, it changes back in 2006 where adult DUI, they do get a warrant and take the blood. So if you're under 21, you still can refuse the chemical test. As a matter of practice for, well, as long as I've been around, which is close to 20 years now, if someone pled guilty to the under 21 charge, the driver licensing program would dismiss the one-year revocation that's required for refusing the chemical test. This bill would actually put that in statute. This statute actually refers to 3223-1, which is an adult DUI, we no longer allow refusals of the chemical test for that. But what it would do is put what we've been doing in practice for 10 years into statute. So I hope I'm being clear, but if the person pleads guilty to the under 21 offense, we would not want to, we don't want to revoke their license for the 1 year for refusing the chemical test.
And when you say the under 21 offense, you're talking about the .02 statute?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yes.
All right. Questions from the committee? Senator Valley?
So I'm 18, 19, and I get pulled over, and the officer is highly suspicious that I've been drinking. And he asks if I want to take a test, and I says no. What happens, just tell me, under current law and what this proposal does.
Okay.
So let's clarify first. Does this person gets arrested by the officer, and then that officer has to take a test?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
So under 3223-21, which is the .02 BAC charge, the person, the minor, is charged with the .02 BAC. Then under the refusal statutes, if they refuse, and this is how it is currently, if they refuse, their license is revoked for 1 year. And in practice, if they plead guilty to that under 21 offense, we've been dismissing the one-year revocation for refusing the chemical test. The statute doesn't really say that. The statute says that if you plead guilty to 3223-1, we can dismiss the revocation for refusing the chemical test. So we want to change the statute to say if we dismiss, if 3223-21 is dismissed, and they, okay, now I'm losing myself, I'm sorry. If they plead guilty to 3223-21, we would dismiss the one-year revocation.
Do away with the law numbers, because I might, just tell me what that law is, because you say, and I get lost in all the numbers, okay, because I'm not familiar with them. That would be helpful to me anyway.
Okay, all right. So have I answered your question or not?
No.
No. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Right now, if a minor refuses the chemical test,
okay,
and they plead guilty to the under 21 charge, we dismiss the one-year revocation for refusing the chemical test. We would like to continue doing that. The statute, as it is, only says if they plead guilty to an adult DUI, can we dismiss that one-year revocation for refusing the chemical test.
Are you telling me that what we're doing is not in law?
Technically, yes. It's been done by policy for years and years and years, and that's why we want to bring it and have the legislature determine. You know, if somebody, do we want someone who's arrested for under 21 to refuse the chemical test and then automatically lose their license for a year, no matter what, for refusing? Or if they plead guilty to the offense, do we want to dismiss that one-year revocation? They still would lose their license for 30 days for the under 21 offense.
Okay.
Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still trying to clarify his question. He's trying to find out what happens. Right now, what happens is if a person pleads guilty to under 21, no matter what, they still lose their license? Or he's asking if they plead guilty to under 21, now they don't, but the law doesn't say they can do that, that the officer, the system can do that.
If they plead guilty to under 21, the under 21 law, the court takes the license for 30 days.
If they plead, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
If they plead guilty right now, if they plead guilty to it, the court still takes their license away.
For 30 days, yes.
For 30 days, but not a year.
But not a year.
That's what the law says right now the court has to do.
No, it says 30 days. The refusal of the chemical test is, I'm sorry, I'm maybe I'm really muddy.
Let me interrupt. I'm going to give Judge Senator Rush a shot at this, and then if necessary, we'll come back to the witness. Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator
thank
Rush.
You, Mr. Chairman. If you get arrested for an adult DWI and refuse the test, you lose your license, but we've written in the statute that if you plead guilty, you don't lose your license. So if you get arrested for a juvenile DWI, they've been following the same procedure, that if you plead guilty, you don't lose your license. But the law doesn't authorize that. The law says you take their license and doesn't provide that alternative if they plead guilty. And this is an effort to try and correct that so that the juvenile DWI would be treated the same as an adult DWI.
Now, I hope I'm not going to muddy the water, but I'm going to add that when we're talking about losing your license, we're not talking about losing your license because of the offense, because you might lose your license because of the offense. We're talking about losing your license for refusing to submit the test.
Yeah.
All right. Now, further questions, Senator Monroe.
I want to address, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to address a question to Senator Rush.
Sure.
So you're just saying right now that under 21, you plead guilty, you lose your license. You don't plead guilty, you lose your license.
Under the law, you should lose your license, but they've not been doing that. They've been applying the same exception that applies to the adults.
Okay. Senator Valley, go ahead.
When we say lose your license, I think we need to say 30 days or a year, because there's definitely a difference when you say, well, you lose your license. Well, you lose your license. Well, one is, if I understand it, if I plead guilty, then I lose it for 30 days. If I say no to the refuse to take the test, I can then lose it for a year. So and what we'd like to do is to go back and say, no, if you plead guilty, you'll only lose it for 30 days, not for the year that you could get it for refusing. If I do two things, one, I'm guilty, and two, I'm
refuse.
We can say, well, if you do that, we'll only give you 30. Now, if the law doesn't give me that opportunity, really, to take away that year refusal. And that's what we're trying to get to, because we do it for the adults. We're just not doing it for the under 21. Is that the?
And that's
am I close?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
You know, and we're talking about, but as Senator Teason pointed out, we're talking about the difference between losing your license because you refused to take the test, and losing your license because of whatever length of time the judge decided to take your license away. But we're talking here about the 1 year lost because you refused to take the test. We're not talking about whatever the judge decides to do.
Okay. Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and tell me this. If you plead guilty, which you're saying here, that if they give that opportunity to this young guy to plead guilty, can the sentence for pleading guilty, can they take their driver's license then for a year anyway?
I think it's a maximum of a I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Rush.
I think it's a maximum of a year. So it's the judge's discretion about how long he takes it for the penalty for the DWI.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
So then the way we're making it sound here, it's automatic, but it's not automatic. It's at the discretion of the judge, right?
Go ahead, Senator Rush.
The automatic is for refusing to take the blood test. That's an automatic 1 year. What the judge does is the discretion of the judge.
Good. All right. Back to questions for the witness? We've gone off course a little bit here. Any further questions for this proponent? All right. Thank you very much. Further proponents, Senate Bill 33. Further proponents. Are there opponents, Senate Bill 33? Are there opponents, Senate Bill 33? All right, seeing none. Closing public testimony. Further questions, and if you've got some, feel free to ask them. This is a complicated enough issue even for those of us that were in the business, and I realize that many of us in the committee were not in this criminal justice business. So, Senator Monroe, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would still like to interrogate Judge Rush. Everybody's mixing the way it's done, the what the law says, and this type of thing. I want to just act like it has. Forget the way it's done. What the law says right now. What the law says right. What the law says right now is if they under 21, if they have the blood test, if they allow it. Judge can take the license away for the offense, whatever, but they still lose their license for a year. Or if they just don't allow it, then it's an automatic loss for a year, no matter what the judge says. Is that the way the law says? Don't worry about how it's done.
Senator Rush, go ahead. Try to walk us through a case if you can, please.
Thank you. Right now, you assuming you're over 21. Get picked up for DWI and say, no, I'm not going to take that blood test. You lose your license for a year automatically for refusing to take the blood test. Now, if you get convicted, if you go to trial on that and you get convicted of the DWI, then the judge imposes a separate sentence, which may include some portion of your driver's license for a year, but you've lost your license because of the refusal to take the blood test. Now, the exception that the legislature put in there some years ago is you can avoid that one-year loss of your license for refusing to take the test if you run in there and plead guilty. Then the one-year loss of your license for refusing to take the test goes away, and then you're just up to the judge's mercy as far as what he's going to do to you for the DWI. Now, the juvenile, there's not been that exception in there. So they lose their license for a year under the law. They lose their license for a year for refusing it, and they can't help themselves by running in there and pleading guilty.
And the clarification, which you didn't want to muddy it up, is that is the way it's been. Juveniles have been handled practically the same as adults have been handled, even though the law technically didn't permit that. And that's what we're trying to correct here today.
Thank you,
Senator Rush, for the. All right. Any further, Senator Rush? Go ahead.
I would move a due pass.
Due pass by Senator Rush, seconded by Senator Heiner. Discussion on the motion. Senator Rush.
You know, they're doing it that way, and I think it's fair to treat the juveniles the same way that we're treating the adults. And I think they thought it was fair. That's why they started doing that, even though the law didn't provide, and probably nobody ever read the statute to determine that. So, you know, I think this is just a fix for that that we ought to pass.
Thank you. Any further comment on the due pass motion? Seeing none, motion is due pass Senate Bill 33. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Heiner?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Bally?
Aye.
Norstrup?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Monroe?
I would move consent.
Motion to consent. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Norstrup. Discussion on the consent motion. Seeing none, all in favor of consent, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. Bill will go to the floor on consent. I'll be, obviously, all we put everything on consent today, but obviously somebody's going to need to have discussions in our caucuses and with our members, so try to... These are relatively simple matters with complicated circumstances. All right. Let me take a moment before, since we're on such a good schedule today, and repeat our future plans. On Tuesday, the 26th, Senate Bills 21 and 22, are Jolene's law bills. They will be taken up following Senate Bill 44, an Attorney General's bill. On the 28th, we will take up Senate Bills 25, 26, and 24. They'll actually be in order, 24, 25, and 26. That would be next Thursday, week from today, correct? Okay. And then we have received a couple of House bills, and we'll get those scheduled. I'm also waiting to get information on the impact statement for the Elder Task Force. We'll try to get that scheduled for everybody's convenience in the future as well. So that's what next week looks like. All right. Any further business for the committee? Seeing none, Senator Rush moves adjourn. Senator Monroe seconds. Discussion on the adjournment motion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye. 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 Those opposed, we are adjourned. Thank you, committee.